on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Yes, coming up 8 minutes after nine, and good morning to you. I'm George Taniki, and I am standing in for one Tony Shebeki. And on that subject, there are two reasons why he can't be with us. One, you'll find out in just a moment when we speak to Brett Anderson. Richmond did lose last night. And two, we did have some technical difficulties, so I want to apologise for those things. We've managed to make some on-the-road adjustments. Everything promises to run fluently and brilliantly between now and the rest of the day. And to help me over that next hour, I'm going to call up a long-time friend of mine. He also happens to be a man of mystery, better known as Troy Zantac. G'day, mate.
Very good morning to you. Good morning, George.
I love it when I throw you off.
Yeah, sorry for those technical difficulties, but fingers crossed the next hour should go smoothly. And, wow, what a round of football. Round 15. Did it throw up a few surprises?
Well, it did. And what we always do on a Sunday morning for the ultimate wrap, we go to the SEN AFL insider, Brett Anderson, who will join us in just a moment. But I've just got to run it past you again. Should all Richmond fans go out and get a coffee at this stage? Take the app with you, but I think you should go and have a coffee.
Yes.
You may not want to hear what's going to come up next.
Wow, it was just an incredible night of football, George.
Well, the weekend round started with a real bang from the Adelaide Oval on Friday.
Yeah.
Should we ask Brett to join us?
I think we should.
Mr. Anderson?
Hello, George.
You've prepared for this, haven't you?
Shebeks has done what Richmond did last night. He hasn't shown up.
Correct. Brilliantly said. And I am. We're off and running, mate. Go on. Tell us what happened. That first half, we're still under. Actually, before we go to Richmond, let's start with Friday.
Okay.
And the big question for Troy has for you.
Is it all over? The defence of the Premiership BA for the Dogs?
I think I said last Sunday they would go on the Dogs, and Friday night probably just backed that up perfectly, because they're just not quite the side that they were, boys. They haven't improved at all. In fact, some of their players have regressed in some ways. But you know what? And Gary Lyon said this a little bit. When the belly's full and you've had that feed and that's the premiership that you've been, striving for so long, the hunger can drop a little bit. I think it's only human nature. But for the Bulldogs supporters out there, the best thing that they get to do is they get to watch a Premiership DVD, or they get to have those memories for the rest of their life. And that'll last them for quite a while to come. So, look, whilst they don't look anything like what they were last year, they still do get to think about what happened in late September last year. But Adelaide looked pretty good, didn't they, again on Friday night? And that was something that they've been building back towards for a while. Their form hasn't been sensational in recent weeks, but They were pretty impressive.
I thought the two key forwards, Taylor Walker and Josh Jenkins, they really took the game by the scruff of the neck. And I tell you what, when you talk about valuable commodities, Jake Lever, Exhibit A.
Absolutely. When you look at the two forwards too, Zanis, when you think about it, no Tom Lynch has meant that Josh Jenkins and Taylor Walker have had to stand up a little bit more in the last 2 weeks. They have, which has been good, because Lynch is so important to that forward line.
Yeah.
And without him, they've really needed those two boys to really come to the fore, and they have, which has been great. At the other end, Lever's a star, a genuine star, and he's probably adding a couple of extra zeros to any potential contract down the line with his form this year. So it's going to be an interesting one, though, to see what he does do, because I think a week ago, the Crows were pretty confident that that he would stay, and that was all the information that I was getting. But in the last sort of couple of days, it seems like it may have swung a little bit, and there might be more of a feeling that he might head back to Victoria.
Just on the Dogs, Brett, what has been the story for this year? I think they won the first four out of their first five games, and from there on, it's just fallen apart.
It has, and I think if we think back to last year, everyone points at the fact they finished seventh. Well, yeah, they finished seventh, but they did win 15 games. So
yes,
that was enough to basically get them in the top four in any other year. And I think they missed the top four in percentage, or maybe by a game. It was one of those remarkable years. But they did win a lot of close games, and that's the thing that you got to look at as well. Is they had that great nose to the finish line. They've had that a little bit at the start of this year, but then it's really fallen away, I think, in terms of... I think we look at selection each week, Xanders, and I've done this with Finey on league teams on Thursday nights. We sit there and there's four and five changes every week. So they've had no continuity in terms of being able to get the team that they want out there, and whether that's due to form or due to injury, and that has played a part in some ways, but they had injuries last year as well. They just haven't been able to get any continuity from week to week, and I think that's a real challenge, especially in what's a really close competition. I think Collingwood's seeing that as well, just that shared experience and that continuity from week to week, and building, I guess, a patch of a month's form where you've got pretty much the same best 22, maybe with one or two changes. I think that's really important, where the Dogs at the moment, you'll go to selection again this week and there'll be four or five changes, whether it be forced or unforced.
And just on structure, a major loss that I've considered this year is the loss of Joel Hambling to Fremantle.
Yeah, well, I guess he's one of the more unlikely premiership players of all time. And when you sit there and think about it, they won a flag with Joel Hambling and Fletcher Roberts as their two key defenders, Zane Cordy playing centre-half forward, and then Tom Boyd playing a bit in the forward and the ruck, and that was basically it. It's one of the more remarkable efforts from a coach and a team in recent times. So the loss of him has hurt, but again, Marcus Adams was injured last year and he's sort of come back and played a bit of footy this year. But yeah, it just something isn't quite right down there. And I guess the hard thing for Luke Beveridge is that he's probably struggling to put his finger on it as well.
Brett, we've got to get to it, mate. All the Richmond people have just gone out to get a coffee. Should we talk about them? Or should we go and touch on that magnificent draw? Can you believe the Giants, 2 weeks in a row, trying to channel the Carlton team, the great Carlton team of the past? With
1921, the last.
Very good year, 1921, mate.
We'll go with the draw, boys. That one very quickly.
Oh, my goodness.
What'd
you make of it? Did you see it coming?
I probably didn't, because I thought GWS with all their injuries would still find a way to win, because I thought Hawthorn, the loss of Birchall for me with Hawthorn really has a big impact. And then when they're two or three goals up late in that last quarter, to then sort of fold and concede ground, and Luke Bruce had a couple of late shots that got them back into the game, and then obviously the Langford goal, which was just a pure fluke that the bounce was over Heath Shaw's head. And then the centre bounce, they nearly lost it. They were a second away from losing at GWS. So that would have been a remarkable last 4 or 5 minutes. But for Hawthorn, I think that's the positive that we're going to take out of Hawthorn's response after such a poor start to the season. And the fact that they've done it now with quite a few senior players out, we're looking at their injury list. There's no Josh Gibson. There's no James Frawley. We know that Birchall's been out of the side as well. And there's a host of other senior players who aren't playing or aren't in the side. Cyril Rioli's out. I think it's a fantastic effort from Hawthorn.
Yeah, you've got to say it's impressive stuff. Impressive.
They're doing it with kids who haven't been high draft picks, who, look, I've had real questions about in the past, having watched them at Box Hill and watched them come through the under-18 system. Aside from Ryan Burton and that, who we always thought were going to be good players, but their ability to turn what might be seen as mediocre players into very good contributors. And the fact that he's been able to move players like Blake Hardwick from what was a forward as a junior to a really nice role across halfback and have some success there. And James Sicily's gone back as well. It's a real tick for Kaiko again. If he doesn't need any more ticks on his coaching CV, this is just another one. And I thought they've been fantastic. And you know what? The dream's still alive for them that they could play finals this year. It's remarkable.
Another case of leather poisoning for Tom Mitchell. Certainly earning his paycheck, Brett. 30 disposals or more in a match, 12 times in a row, which is an AFL record. So he's been an outstanding recruit.
35, I think, to three-quarter time yesterday, Zanners. He only had the four in the last quarter. So he did drop off a little bit when GWS did make their run after trailing at three-quarter time. But he just keeps finding the footy. And the good thing about Tom now is he's really starting to kick goals. It's something that I think that that all the good midfielders, the very top midfielders, have in their game, and he's starting to add that, which is great for Hawthorn. And when you look at the trade that they did, everyone's going to point at the Jago Mira deal and whether he plays or not. But I'll tell you what they did with Tom Mitchell is I think they'd be quite happy if he walked away now and think that deal was a real success for Hawthorn.
All right, we've got to get to it now. Let's talk about Richmond.
As everyone
did they? Where did they go for the first half, by the way?
I don't know, but I don't think I've ever seen a first half where an 82-point margin flattered the team that was trailing. They should have been down by 120 points at half time. Josh Bruce had 1 goal, 5 in the first half, 2 from the goal square.
He did.
They made some shocking mistakes at times, St Kilda, with a few of their players. But Richmond, I don't think anyone saw that coming. Look, I think St Kilda's record on a Saturday night would have lent some people to tip St Kilda. I think maybe they could squeak it. And their record's been okay.
At Etihad.
Especially at Etihad on a Saturday night, absolutely. But to see that coming, was it 92-10 at halftime? I think you've just got to put it down to Richmond. It's, you take some learnings out of that first half, but probably just take it as one out of the box. But St Kilda, all credit to them. They were fantastic. It was one of the best performances we've seen from a team in the last few years in a half of footy.
To me, Brett, it all started in the engine room. Seb Bross and Jack Stephen, 66 possessions between them.
I'll throw in Kobe Stephens too on that
one. He went okay too.
I think he had 20 possessions and 2 goals at halftime in a run with roll on Dustin Martin.
Yeah.
About 5 possessions. Like, that was one of the more comprehensive floggings that Dusty's got in a long, long time. And I think when you look at it too, Trent Cotchin reported early for a very undisciplined act, which cost his team a goal when the Saints' tails were up and just gave them further momentum. Alex Rance gave away the 50-metre penalty early on. I think that Membry got the goal from when he threw Loney to the ground. So both on Loney. So Loney got under the skin of two of their leaders. And I think that really set the tone from a St Kilda point of view. And maybe the die was cast a little bit from a Richmond point of view when you've got your leaders doing that. And Alex Rance probably had one of his worst halves of footy in a long time. Nick Riewoldt made him look silly at times in that first half last night and his ability to lead up on him. And Alex got frustrated and gave away free kicks. And it was when you look at the leadership that Richmond showed compared to St Kilda's leaders, there was a real vast difference. Jack Riewoldt was really quiet at the other end, mainly because the ball didn't get down there. But it was an amazing performance from St Kilda and a really poor performance from Richmond. And the fact that they won the second half, I think, means a little bit. It shows they've got some spirit in the group. Like, I reckon Richmond teams or other teams in the past might have really folded and that would have been a 20-goal loss. But they won the second half. And people will say that was junk time goal, 6-2 in the last quarter. Well, yeah, it might be a little bit, but I think you can learn a little bit about the mentality of a group and how they come back from something like that, because they had every right to roll right over, but they fought back. And in the end, percentage is important this year, guys, and they were able to save some percentage that they lost. It was still a bit of a big chunk that they lost, but it wasn't as much as what it was going to be at half time.
Brett, moving on, another team that needed to win and couldn't do it was Collingwood. They ran into the Bombers, and the Bombers were very, very keen to make sure that their week was going to be much better than Collingwood. So big questions now surrounding Nathan Buckley.
Yeah, look, it's probably not looking that flash for Bucks at the moment, which I think is unfortunate because I really like him in terms of what he brings to the table. Coaching-wise, look, yeah, there might be some things he might need to improve on. Only the people inside the coach's box on a weekend could really tell you that. It's pretty easy to sit on the couch and make all these assessments as to what he should and shouldn't do. But they were pretty poor yesterday. And I think the loss of Jeremy Howe before the game really hurt them, I think, especially when you look at the marking power that Essendon have got in attack. And whilst it was a few of the talls who did play well, it was also at ground level too. And it was a bit of a bruise-free game of footy yesterday, and the Bombers were far too good in the end. And I think you have a look at David Zaharakis, 38 or 39 possessions. A whole stack of Essendon players had a truckload of the footy. Probably Collingwood's worst performance for the year, and one that, as we said at the start, is going to have the natives fairly restless.
Loved Dyson Heppel's game. Stepped up to the plate, led from the front. James Kelly turning back the clock, and Orazio Fantasia, an excitement machine with 5 goals. Exciting times ahead for the Bombers.
It is, but the challenge for them is now to do that every week.
Consistency,
the last couple of weeks having conceded leads late. So they've played some decent footy, and it's just, for whatever reason, they've fallen away very late in games. Well, obviously, it didn't happen yesterday. So their form has been okay if you take out sort of the last 10 or 15 minutes of games. But it was a hard one to tip yesterday in terms of you just didn't know what you were going to get from either side. But the Bombers were really good. And what Collingwood now lurch further into, I think they're nearly in the bottom four now, aren't they, the Pies, when you look at that compressed ladder. So
yeah, they're 15th currently, Brett.
Yeah, it's not looking flash for them at the moment. I think, obviously, finals are now out of the equation for Collingwood, which is disappointing because I think a month ago was leading up to that Queen's Birthday game against Melbourne. We all had pretty high hopes of where potentially Collingwood could get to. So it's fallen away since then.
Stavros Aboulialis, the guy who runs the Stavros Tavern, it's about to close at Albert Park after about 37 years. He's a huge Collingwood man. I reckon now that he's giving the restaurant game away, he might think about stepping up and being a coach at Collingwood, or contender at least. Am I being too harsh?
How many hands do you think are being put up at the moment, BA, as far as...
It's a difficult one, Dan. It's when you look at Collingwood, and I think I'm of the theory or of the mindset of many others, that when you look at if they are to make a change, so let's just say they are to make a change, that it's not in Collingwood's nature to go and hire a Luke Beveridge or a Brendan Bolton or one of those first-time coaches and take a punt then. It's more the Collingwood's history says that they'll go with a high-profile coach, so like your Paul Roos type, or try and get
Alistair Clarkson,
or I don't know, a Ross Lyon, or someone like that. But I think I think that's where the problem is for Collingwood, is I think they need to go down the path of backing in the coaching system and getting a Brendan Bolton in and saying, okay, no, this is our man. No, you know what, it might not be sexy, it might not be what the supporters want in terms of, oh, we always want this high-profile name.
Brett.
I think at times it's changed. Collingwood, it's got to change, and something's got to change there. And if they are to make the move, well, that would be my suggestion, rather than going down that let's go headhunt and poach someone.
Let me just cut you off there for a moment. Jeff Kennett spoke recently on Fox Footy, and he said no one should be around a club, whether they're an official or whether they're a coach. And he was talking about, you know, when you thought was the right length of time to be anywhere. And he said about 7 to 9 years.
Yeah.
Clarko's the longest running coach at the moment in most of those clubs. And he's well past 9 years. How long has he been there?
Clarko's 2004.
2004 he stepped in.
Yeah.
So is he ready to go then?
I wouldn't have thought so at the moment. But well, there's always a possibility, I guess, in terms of what happens with a coach's tenure. I don't think I saw Ross Lyon walking out and going to Fremantle, did they, in that situation when he was at St Kilda? But just from my point of view, and I think a lot of people close to Collingwood feel the same thing, that it's time that they maybe, if they are to make a change on the coach, that it's about bringing in someone who's got the credentials in terms of the right person at the time for the job, rather than just putting the name alongside and thinking, okay, well, this will work, because it sort of hasn't worked quite a few times, not only for Collingwood, but other clubs as well.
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Sydney, we'll talk about Geelong, and we'll talk about what's happening later this afternoon with Carlton take on the Demons.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Oh, that's the second person that can't get it right. You know, Troy Zantac said this morning, morning, Shebekster. Oh, no, it's Danukian. Oh, my God. Good morning. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. This is the ultimate wrap on SEN.
Thanks, Shebek.
And it's George Danukian in the chair. Surprise, surprise. But we do have the master himself, the SEN insider.
The Oracle.
Brett Anderson. Yeah, exactly right. Who's been guiding us through a preview. I mean, not a post setup of what's happened of the...
A synopsis of
round
15.
He's done a fabulous job. Yeah. Now we've got to find out how Sydney have made it five wins on the trot after a horror start to what could well be a truly remarkable season. Brett?
They just blew them away, George, in the second quarter. It was a pretty even first quarter. Tom Lynch had the three goals. Buddy had two. Gary Rowan had two. But after quarter time, it was all one-way traffic for the Swans. And they did it without Josh Kennedy, who was a late withdrawal as well. So that was fairly impressive from their point of view. But five goals, career high to Gary Rowan. He was electric in the
fourth. It's good to see him back.
Absolutely. He's playing some good footy in recent weeks now, Gary Rowan. So he's adding a different dynamic to that fourth half. But look, they were just really good throughout the whole day. And look, Gold Coast probably a little bit disappointing after quarter time, because, as I said, they were right in the game early on, and then they just really fell away, which was disappointing. But David Swallow was quite good overall for Gold Coast. Look, obviously, no Gary Ablett hurts them, and Stephen May probably tried really hard in his role on Buddy Franklin. He kept him to three goals, four, but wasn't quite the performance that Gold Coast were looking for in the end.
Let's talk about Geelong. They were pretty good too.
They were.
Impressive stuff.
I think a 10-goal second quarter, George, that blew the Lions away, because the Lions are pretty good early, and in some ways, maybe the Lions had the best player in the ground in Dane Zorko. 36 possessions, 10 clearances, 4 goals. Pretty handy day, I would have thought, running through midfield against a very, very good opposition. But the Cats flexed their muscles a bit last night, and Tom Lonigan's 200th, and I think it was Mitch Duncan's 150th as well. So looked after a few of their great players in their milestone games. But Tom Hawkins kicked 3 or 4 again last night, and he gave off quite a few as well. He was really unselfish with some of his ball use inside forward 50. But just that midfield was the thing that Brisbane, very young side, they're going to be a good team, I think, in years to come, Brisbane. But last night they ran into a side that was just bigger, stronger and better than them.
Great post-mortem there. Let's talk preview. SEN this afternoon at Etihad. It's North Melbourne and the Dockers. What's going on?
Yeah, so it'll be a boundary side for that one. It's probably not the most exciting matchup of the weekend, but I think the Roos...
Don't talk it down.
I'm just telling you the truth. We want the truth on the show. We were looking at games on the surface, but I think the Roos are right in the mix here. I think they might even be favourites in the moment, so they're a good opportunity to get another win on the board this afternoon. Fremantle's form's been up and down last week. Obviously, the loss to St Kilda, the fade-out against Geelong the week before. But they'll be really desperate to come over here and put in a good show. I think the key for North Melbourne is keeping track of Michael Walters. His form recently has been outstanding. One of the better players in the competition over the last month, where it's through midfield and kicking goals. So they're going to have to put a lot of time and effort into him. But I'm really looking forward to seeing North, actually, today, because I haven't seen them live pretty much all year. So ideally, a few of their kids they're giving an opportunity to. Now, Dan Nilsson comes in for his debut. I think Cam Zerha is as well. So really exciting from that point of view for North Melbourne supporters.
And the Blues take on the D's at the MCG today at 20 past three. It's the D's 8th, the Blues 16th. The D's win, they can jump a few spots on the ladder. Big game for the D's.
As a Melbourne supporter, I think back to 2000 and I think it was 2005, Carlton finished on the bottom and they beat Melbourne twice. Cost them a top four spot or a top two spot. I think last year Melbourne were making some sort of a charge towards the finals until they ran into Carlton. So the Blues have got a very good record at playing spoilers in recent times over the Demons when the Demons have had a decent side. And with those injuries, the midfield battle is going to be crucial because Carlton certainly has the better midfield on paper today. It's just how much Melbourne can scrap and fight to stay in the game in that way and then give their forwards, which is where they do have the strength advantage, an opportunity to kick a winning score. I can't see it being a high-scoring game today, guys. I think maybe 12 goals might be the winning total.
SEN's other game this evening is the match being played at Domain Stadium. It's West Coast versus Port Adelaide. And Port Adelaide, if they're going to do something serious, they've got to beat a side that's in the top eight, eh?
Yeah, I don't think the Eagles are in the top eight, though, at the moment, George. That's the only thing. I think they might have slid out checking the
You know how to change the storyline real quick, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, currently sitting ninth. But
missed it by that much.
It's not going to help them too much this afternoon if they do win, because people will still say, well, they still haven't been in the top eight. But they when they played West Coast at Adelaide Oval, they absolutely battered West Coast. For most of the night, they had double inside 50s, but they bombed the ball in and they sat it on their heads inside forward 50, which is what West Coast want with their intercept marking down back. So I think you'll see a different way that Port play against West Coast over there today. They've brought in Joe Attlee for his debut. He'll give them some run through midfield. I think Port will win the game over there, especially with no Josh Kennedy still. I'm just still concerned about how West Coast can kick a winning score. I know Jack Darling played well last week and Drew Petrie's played a bit of a role for them. But I just think Port Adelaide, this is one that they can really steel themselves to go over and grab.
And just quickly, Brett, David Roden, a former Tiger and power player, to make his debut between the big sticks as goal umpire today at Etihad Stadium, where North take on Freo. So keep an eye out for the moonwalk because we know he's got some slick dance moves.
Well, there you go, because I actually didn't know that he had made his debut already, because we saw him in the JLT series and I think maybe even the NAB Cup in recent years doing some work between the sticks, and actually hadn't even picked up the fact that he hadn't made his AFL debut yet. So good luck to David Roden. Former Demon as well, Zanners.
Yes.
No favourites.
Former Demon.
No favourites is an official. Thank you very much.
Good on you, Brett.
Thank you, Brett. 9:37. This is the ultimate wrap on SEN. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, it's that man, Brett Phillips, talking all things Wimbledon.
On 11:16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
No. It's George Denikian. Get it right. It's 19 minutes to 10. Don't worry, we'll in 18 minutes or 19 minutes' time, you won't have to worry. It'll be Finey and Mr. Kearney, and they'll do the ultimate post-mortem, and all things will be right in the world.
Absolutely. But great to be with you, Tony.
Thanks very much. You're going to make it very difficult for me to say. Ladies and gentlemen, our Wimbledon update, which is coming up with the man himself, Brett Phillips, comes to you compliments of ASTE. That's Melbourne's tennis court specialists and the synthetic turf professionals. If you want to know more about ASTE, why don't you head to www.aste.com.au. And here he is, Brett Phillips. Good morning.
George Zenners, good morning to you.
You're the first person this morning who didn't call me Shebexter. So now let's get on to it.
Your dulcet tones are very distinctive, George.
But Wimbledon is just getting to that juicy part of the competition. Everybody's starting to pick their favourites or the ones that they think will go all the way. Who do you reckon is looking prime and choice to be the next Wimbledon champion?
Look, it's been a terrific first week of tennis, and the weather's been very kind, George. They will have the traditional middle Sunday off. When I was there last year, we were playing catch-up with all the rain. So that's a good thing. It's because it's such a traditional part of Wimbledon. But
it'll help the older guys too, won't it?
Well, it will. And I was just about to say, you know, with the men, we keep coming back to the status quo. And right now, I'm finding it very hard to change the script away from a Murray Nadal semi-final on one stage and a Federer Djokovic semi-final on the other. So all is going to plan. I mean, Novak was, you know, terrific overnight. He had a real test in Ernests Gulbis, the great man from Latvia, who, to be honest, doesn't even need to play tennis. He's from a billionaire family, and he, you know, he's been inside the top 10. He's actually come into this tournament ranked about 589 in the world, Big Ernest. So he goes through fits and starts. But Djokovic, you know, withstood the early pressure.
Yeah,
and won pretty comfortably. And now's got Manarino, the unseeded Frenchman, who defeated Gael Monfils overnight. So the draw opens up nicely for Novak and Roger Federer last night. I mean, difficult playing a serve volleyer in Misha Zverev. And the great part about Federer is that his ability to mix things up. I mean, he was, you know, getting really good dipping returns into the body. Then he was passing. Then he changed his tactics again. And Misha, look, he's got a good serve and he comes in behind. We like that sort of tennis. But, gee, you know, Federer just counteracted it beautifully. And, you know, he's primed to go really deep. And he's got Dimitrov next. And there's always been the comparisons, Gregor being dubbed Baby Fed, and he's playing some terrific tennis in this tournament, but has never beaten Roger Federer in five attempts, so another opportunity.
I saw some highlights of young Nadal, and he's looking powerful. All those injury woes look like they've gone.
George, he is in cherry ripe nick at the moment. So physically, mentally, having that break between the French and Wimbledon, going back to Mallorca for 10 days, not playing Queens, I think has suited him beautifully. He's looking for a third title. He is as good a chance as any, and it's always tough to separate the top four. You know, Murray loves playing at Wimbledon in front of his home crowd. Nadal, he'd love to add another Wimbledon after being so dominant, the French. Djokovic is getting his mojo back, and Roger's going for an eighth. So there's a good storyline wherever you look into the second week, but Nadal has just been on song right from the start of this tournament.
And there's another controversial but very interesting story happening in the women's. Venus Williams, one of the oldest players to still be competing in this particular competition. 37 years of age. And after that first emotional few days where the incident where she had that accident in America and it's claimed a life, she seems to have gathered herself and she's starting to play with some pretty powerful strokes.
Isn't it amazing, George? I mean, the fact her career is being prolonged. I mean, she could play to 40, Venus. She's still in fantastic physical
as long
nick.
As Serena doesn't play on.
That's a reasonable point. But she, you know, she's just seeing off 19-year-olds. Now, I love it when the older established players can still just put the young players at bay to say, hang on, you'll get your turn, but I'm still determined to win titles. She's going for, what, a sixth Wimbledon crown. The women's is much more difficult. All I'll say is this. Going into the second week, there's two that I've put a little asterisk next to them. One of them is Victoria Azarenka, who's a two-time Grand Slam champion. If she came back and won Wimbledon on the back of 13 months off the tour giving birth, it'd be one of the great stories, like Clijsters winning the US Open all those years ago.
Yeah,
and she's a born winner, Azarenka, who's just a ferocious competitor. And the other one is just a sneaky is Coco Vandeweghe, who made the semis of the Australian Open, being coached Zanners by Pat Cash.
Yes.
Could it be the omen 30 years on?
Wow.
After Cash's triumph that he coaches a Wimbledon champion. Now, Coco would have to play at her absolute best, but the women's is open and she's a chance.
Just on Venus Williams, BP, she's the oldest woman to reach the fourth round at Wimbledon since Martina Navratilova, also at 37. That particular year, Martina was runner-up in 1994, so
yep.
there's some good form lines there for Venus.
Yeah, made the semis last year. I mean, she loves the grass, so it's always been a very kind surface to her. But look, yeah, fantastic week of tennis, no doubt about it. And you remember the young man Marcus Willis last year from Great Britain who qualified? He was 700 in the world.
That's
sort of
right.
They said, well, what are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, he didn't qualify for the singles this time, but he and his British partner, Clark, defeated Herbert and Mahul, the great French duo, overnight. That would be a fairy tale if Marcus Willis went on to win a doubles crown. So there's all these little good stories around the superstars.
Well, you've given us a great update and a fantastic
just a quick one,
post-mortem,
George.
But Troy's still got one more for
yeah,
you.
The,
he won't let you go.
The horrific injury to Bethany Maddox-Sands, that was tragic.
She is one of the great characters. When we often talk about sports people being sometimes bland, Bethany certainly is not bland. She's got different colour rinse in her hair. She's got the compression socks. So she's got the dance moves. Her and Lucy Safarova were going for four Grand Slam doubles titles in a row. That's how dominant they've been. And, yeah, just... There was painful to watch, and she's going to spend some time off the tour, but she's a great character of the game.
Thank you, Brett. You on again this evening with the tennis program?
Big addition of the first serve. We'll wash up the first week, George, from 10 o'clock tonight. Mark Sifoulis and Paul Aiken, two very astute coaching minds, will break it all down with me. And we'll chat to James Duckworth, the injured Aussie, who hasn't played since the Aussie Open. And we may have a chat with Craig Tiley, pending flights and everything else a little bit later on tonight.
Thank you, Brett Phillips. That Wimbledon update, by the way, came to us compliments of ASTE, Melbourne's tennis court specialists, and the synthetic turf professionals. And as we said at the beginning of the update, why don't you head to www.aste.com.au if you want to know some more. And right now, I want to know a bit more about what happened to our Storm. Now, I know we shouldn't get too close to some of the football teams because we need to be neutral.
We may have had a few
but the Melbourne Storm,
out, George.
Well, all right, it's you would have thought we'd prepare accordingly. We've got the best coach in the world, Craig Bellamy, and we've got Gilbert Gardner from the Herald Sun, who is the Melbourne Storm reporter. You know, we don't just go to anybody to get an
Gilbert's
update.
All
so Gilbert,
over the NRL.
Gilbert, what in heaven's name happened?
Oh, look, it's just a forgive run. Let's be honest.
Mate, it was the enormity of the loss. It's 22-6 to Parramatta, no less.
But it was for 50 minutes, it was 6 all there. In 10 minutes to go in the second, in the first half, through to the end of the game. It was a real heart stopper there for a while. But, look, the damage was done early. And, of course, the Eels at full strength, they were just too strong.
Oh,
yeah, well, as I said, Gilbert, the names of Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater, Will Chambers, Glasby and Cameron Munster, you take them out of any team and you might struggle a little bit.
Oh, no doubt. And you add Jordan McLean to that, who's out with a hamstring injury, a big boy, big enforcer, like a block of flats running at you. he was out.
Mate, I'd be sidestepping really quickly. If I saw a block of flats coming my way, I'd do the Danukian shuffle. Left and then right off the pitch. Thank you very much.
And look, poor old Chase Blair, he got injured in the first half as well. They were really battered up. But I guess it was just the most disappointing part was the way they started the game. They were really flat. Mm. They were sort of ambushed in a sense. And I guess the Eels didn't want to take anything for granted. So they hit them hard and made the result.
There were some interesting results, but I suppose we should temper everything, as you did at the very, very beginning, by mentioning yet again that Wednesday night, it's Origin 3. And
that's right,
we should have a reverb, sound effect in the background. As I say, Origin 3, as you go, 3-3-3.
Well, of course, it's a time-honoured clash, the Melbourne Maroons versus the New South Wales Blues.
That's right. If you're a Queenslander, it's Maroons. Yeah? Everyone else wants to say Maroons. We're not marooned on any island. It's Queensland, the Maroons, taking on the New South Wales Blues.
Well, let's be honest. The Queensland Maroons, whichever side of the tracks you're from, probably wouldn't be able to win the game if it wasn't for our boys. So
correct.
Look, I'm really looking forward to the game. It's going to be a massive one, and potentially the last dance. Will we see Smith, Slater, Cronk again in Maroons jumpers? Who knows?
Yeah, the sad part about all that, Gilbert, is it'll be a Thurston-less State of Origin team for Queensland.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, Cam Munster slots into the six, so another Melbourne or Rockhampton boy originally. Excuse me if you can hear the birds in the background, boys.
We like special effects, mate. We like special effects.
Hillsville Sanctuary.
Yeah. on a bit of a trail walk at the minute, between train tracks and some sort of flock of crows, actually.
But, half your luck, Gilbert.
Are you telling me that the Herald Sun doesn't have a taxi voucher to get you?
No. It's part of pre-season training. Storm have a bye this week, so thought I'd get out, pound the pavement a bit.
So that's why you sound a little breathless.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't the football loss. It's you just running around and feeling it.
Yeah, well, look, we're 8Ks into a 20K walk, so we're going pretty well at the minute. But I digress. No, look, Cam Munster, I think he's going to be... he'll be a bit of a surprise packet. Craig Bellamy could not speak highly enough for the kid. Really tough player. A natural footballer. You'll hear Craig say that all the time. And if Craig Bellamy says he won't let you down, well, I'm willing to trust him.
No, we'll back that up. And we trust Gilbert Gardner when he tells us what's happening in the world of rugby league. The NRL, an interesting round, but as you say, everything's been affected by the great big game coming up on Wednesday night.
And in other results, Gilbert, Sydney Roosters 14, down South Sydney Rabbitohs 12, and Penrith... They knocked over Manly 16-8.
Yeah, Panthers are awesome.
Yeah, look, just get on the Storm wagon, boys. They're going to be really strong. Second half, they're actually cherry ripe, because I think what we forget this year, and it's a bit different to previous years, the Origin boys haven't been playing after Origin either, so they're really rested up. I think it'll be a really good second half of the year.
All right, well, we're going to let you take a rest. Thank you very much for joining us. Gilbert Gardner, the Herald Sun Melbourne Storm reporter. It's 9.52, which means we're very close to the 10 o'clock news spot, and Finey and Kearney will be coming. But when we come back after this break, a chance to reflect on the glory days of the football when the full forwards reign supreme.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Oh, I love that music. It's George Dineke and Troy Zantuck, actually, and it is part of the Ultimate Wrap, and we're almost getting close to news time, and Finey and Kearney will be here with the Ultimate Postmortem. But the Glory Day man is here, Mr. Zantuck. There was a time in football when the full forwards did reign supreme.
There certainly was, George. Round 15 bagfuls, and the Bombers, it was Paul Salmon kicking 11 goals to against the West Coast Eagles in 1987. For the Cats, it was Gary Ablett on fire against the Demons in 1993 with 11, kicking 124 in that particular season.
God.
The incredible part of that game was that Melbourne actually won 22-9, 141 to the Cats, 20-7, 127. For the West Coast Eagles, it was Peter Sumich absolutely on fire against the Bombers in 1992. With 11-8 at the MCG in front of a crowd of 33,000 people, the West Coast Eagles by 75 points. But my personal favourite for the Doggies fans, and don't they need some cheering up, it was Simon the Pieman Beasley kicking 12-3 against the Demons way back in 1985. Simon Beasley kicking 93 for the season to win the Coleman medal. Footscray 26-13, 169, defeating Melbourne 6-13, 49. It is and still remains Footscray's biggest ever winning margin, 120 points.
Probably Shane D'Elia is still reflecting on that day and probably convinced him to remain a Bulldog forever.
Glory days.
Glory days.
Round 15.
Fantastic stuff. By the way, we need to mention one of our favourite places, Dunderson Fawcett in Albert Park.
Yes, it is where the stars align for fabulous food and wine. And on a day like today, a cold Melbourne day, the 5 grains porridge is the ticket.
And it's also a great atmosphere and everybody fronts up. Importantly, they've got a brand new place at the South Melbourne Markets.
They have,
it's called
George, Bamboo.
All right.
So do yourself a flavour favour. Bamboo at the South Melbourne Market.
So if you're thinking Asian, that's the place to be. We're almost out of here. Once again, thank you very much, Troy Zantuck.
Thank
man
you, George.
Of mystery.
Daniki.
No more. We know all about you, mate.
And thanks to the listening audience.
And yes, if you're wondering, Mr. Shebexter will be back after his long, long hike, wherever he's been. But right now, it's almost news time. And after the news, it's the ultimate post-mortem with Finey and Cooney.